The Free for All Roundtable.
Round one.
On round one, Robert Turner is here from News Talk 1010. Pavan Broch, serial entrepreneur in health and tech, and has the very impressive distinction of having invented mooing milk cartons in the 1990s. Shelley Carroll is here, Toronto City Councillor. Good to have y'all. And I know I didn't put it on the agenda. It's because when we were drawing it up, the sun hadn't come up on the encampment at the U of T. But now we know it's there, and it's going to get messy, I think. Robert Turner, I'll start with you. By my count, there's probably about 16, 17, maybe even 20 tents at the U of T, and they dug in overnight.
Yeah, they broke through a fence, didn't they? They put up a fence, and then they got through the fence. So this shouldn't require an injunction. They're clearly trespassing. So I mean, if somebody broke into my backyard and set up a tent, I'm assuming I'd call the cops. They'd come drag them out. So
we had that at our house.
Maybe we could just get that process rolling, because this is only going to get harder. The more entrenched it gets, the worse it's going to get. We could do it faster with a fire hose, but I know nobody wants to do that. So let's just go in and get them out.
You're the man now.
Well, but how does this end otherwise? It goes on for weeks, and then they get their big moment on CP24 as the cops finally have to go in and drag them out.
Okay, Pavan Broch, your thoughts.
Yes, well, I guess we can't tell people how to feel, but I do agree. You know, you have the right to protest peacefully. That doesn't mean setting up, tent cities and all that type of encampment stuff. So I think a lot of people are frustrated with this, the fact that it appears all the time nowadays that there are two sets of laws. There's the set of laws for the law abiding, and then there's a set of laws for those who have a beef and want to do what they want to do. So, we don't want to end up in another situation like the convoys, et cetera. Well, I do want to point out I did want to point out quickly, too, that, it's interesting that this thing actually, these folks are protesting, but in fact, the entire world has asked Hamas to release the hostages. And, I find it disingenuous that they're picking on one side and not both sides. And it's also critical, NBC reports that Hamas as a political party has fallen to 34% support among Palestinians in Gaza. So they themselves are not even supporting them the way they did.
Shelley Carroll, your thoughts? Because I think this is only going to get worse. And if you look at McGill, for example, where this began, it actually began in the United States, but it started in Canada at McGill. They, asked the police to get rid of the protesters. That was 2 days ago.
Yeah, and this is going to be very awkward. Thing to keep in mind is that academic institutions, much like governments, are somewhat political organizations. They have to worry about the opinions of fundraisers and investors and all the rest, and the faculty themselves. And so there's doing things immediately is almost as impossible for them as for governments. Because you got to weigh all of the liberties and rights, et cetera, and then figure out what to do. And this isn't a coordinated North America-wide thing. This is not like they're springing up here and there, kind of like Vietnam protests. These people have the benefit of digital communication and really coordinating things across the entire continent. And so, and it's warm weather, perfect time for protesting and camping. And so it's going to have to be handled in a way that is delicate. You don't want to do something here that causes riots that might even end in death, such as we had in a couple of rare cases back in the 60s. So they're trying to figure out what is the best way to proceed. And I dare say there's a lot of communication between academic organizations trying to figure out what to do. Can we coordinate that as well as the students have coordinated?
Okay, so let's turn to another story this morning that a lot of people are chatting about, and that's the OPP. They're going to begin mandatory alcohol screenings during traffic stops in the GTA. So, Pavan, you get pulled over for speeding, blow into this.
Okay, yeah, well, sadly for them, I don't drink, so, it'll be a bit of a waste of time and a waste of a perfectly good straw. But, I think certainly if impaired driving is up and they're saying it's up 30%, then they do need to make these kinds of announcements. I was surprised that they have the ability to just do things without cause, but I guess that is a law that has been on the books for a while now. So, I think at the end of the day, they're just going to rely on the fact that they're talking about doing this, because I continue to point out that the number of tickets, the enforcement by all levels of traffic law enforcement, be it provincial or municipal, is just so far down from 10 years ago that most people, I think, just don't expect to be pulled over anyways.
Shelley Carroll, maybe it just means that all drunk people behind the wheel are going to follow all of the traffic rules.
Well, they had better. Because, you know, to be outraged about this is kind of silly, because you're already being pulled over because you broke a law. Speeding is breaking a law. People say, get rid of the speed trap. I'm outraged. Well, they're supposed to be out there catching lawbreakers. Speeding causes death. So does drunk driving. And, you know, people who are upset about the extent of these laws, I say, well, then don't break any laws.
Okay.
It's that simple. I paid a parking fine yesterday that I found kind of steep, but I myself voted for said parking fine.
What did you do?
I did break the rule. I parked in a place that I thought was still free because it was a childcare spot and the childcare is closed until September. But no, it's still a no parking zone. And somebody came along and gave me a ticket. And it's a little more expensive than they used to be. But that was the point. We're trying to unclog roads.
Okay. Robert Turner, I would imagine there is going to be a challenge to this change, but Supreme Court has already said that roadside breathalyzer tests are not a violation of the charter.
Well, it was specifically for the ride check, yeah. Right? Which is done based on they pull all the cars over coming. The issue that could happen with this one is this is based on traffic stops, which police have to have a reason or should have a reason before they're pulling someone over. And we know from police data that they've released that they over-police what they would call racialized communities. So are you now not going to have a policy that means more minorities are going to end up getting breathalyzed than everybody else? And how is that not a systemically racist policy?
Good questions.
Well, funnily enough, Robert, the early stats show that once we started coming down hard on speeding, things get very, very equal real quick, because there's no racial divide where speeding is concerned. White people speed a lot, too. So if that's the reason we're pulling them over, things are going to get fair.
Yeah, but this is specifically traffic stops, right? So this could mean anybody. And that's what I'm saying. There need to be safeguards on this, right? We're all for making everything safer. I just want to make sure we're looking at the data. I want to find out at the end of this, if they do it for a year, how many people blew a positive breathalyzer, were compelled to give another sample, because presumably that's what will happen. And then that came back and it was negative. Like, if this machine can get it wrong, I mean, I'm all for making things safer too, but powers police have can be abused. Technology can be wrong. And at the end of the day, it means I'm being detained by police at the side of the road and I didn't do anything to warrant that. This is not about people that they smell alcohol, right? This is just everybody they pull over. That's a new step.
Yeah.
Speaking of speeding, Shelley, your quick thoughts on somebody sabotaging the most famous speed camera in Toronto, which is at Parkside, which has incidentally brought in $4 million in 18 months, but somebody spray painted it.
Yeah. There's a real struggle going on around this. But the heavy enforcement along this road is because it's a road you really can't redesign. It's an artery that needs to do what it's doing as a road design. But there have been traffic fatalities there, and the local community has had enough. And so they want heavy enforcement. They want the speeding crackdown on, and people are just not getting the message. And you should expect to get a ticket there. Someone said, well, people are passing me if I go the speed limit. Well, they'll get a ticket, and eventually, collectively, we'll all be abiding by the law, and people will stop dying on Parkside Drive. Speed tickets or behavior management.
Okay, so there's two stories about age and finance and home ownership and other things that I think we can compress together. But I'll go with the top headline, which is apparently nearly 60% of retirees are supporting adult children financially. As I mentioned, that kind of dovetails nicely with another story about how one in six homeowners born in the 90s co-own their home with their parents. But Pavan, I'll start with you on this one. People can do what they want with their money, but retiring is not cheap. And then feeling this need to support your adult children instead of them supporting themselves and eventually you seems a bit upside down.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is instinctive, though, for folks that have kids and to do what they can, obviously. And but it's a sad state of affairs. You know, I think, you know, we look at the housing situation and what is driving the cost of housing through the roof. I mean, at this point in time, nobody's building houses. They've stopped because of the interest rates and construction costs, which are out of control. So it's really put younger people who are starting their lives out in a real bind. And we know the facts. The tragedy is, you know, we just let 1 million new Canadians in, but only 2% of them have construction skills. And the restrictions on development are so strong. And, you know, the thing that I want to come back to, though, is that, you know, first of all, you know, a young person earning a good salary is stuck with endless numbers of taxes at every level of government. And so that's a big issue. But now the federal government is increasing the capital gains tax on said parents, you know, so that when the kid needs some support with schooling or housing purchases or whatever the case may be, mom and dad is now going to be taxed after June 25th at a rate that is far, far higher. And this is going to make it much more difficult for younger people to get support from parents. So I think Trudeau talks about trying to help the younger generation, the next generations, but he's in fact done quite the opposite with this capital gains tax.
And Shelley, I mean, there may be an upside to all of this. The especially 1 in 6 homeowners born in the 90s co-owns with their parents. They may actually share a house with their parents or live in a duplex. But anyway, your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not really objecting to the capital gains tax because by and large, I don't have any capital gains. And the reason is, you know, my daughter, who is a single parent getting no child support from the ex, and my family, we're both public sector wages. So not super generous, but we're fortunate. But the only way we're surviving nowadays and making sure that the grandkids have opportunities is really to pool the big ticket items. You know, that the kids need to have sports careers. We have to pool our two public sector level wages to make that happen. And we are, as I approach retirement, my husband's already retired. We're starting to talk about, well, what's the long-term plan here? Maybe we somehow co-own or share home ownership. Maybe we just look at reality and we're going to have to keep pooling. And once I'm in retirement, maybe we're even figuring out a living situation together. That's becoming very, very common because this myth of all baby boomers are rich, as we move down, I'm the youngest year of the baby boom, we're not all rich. You know, we're pensioned. I'm going to be very fortunate because I am going to have that Omer's pension that people like to talk about. But thank goodness, because I'm going to be supporting multiple generations, and that's becoming more and more common across Canada, which means if we're looking at benefits and things that governments can do, they need to start to look at that as a family model and figure out how they support that.
Thank you all. Good to have you. Robert Turner, Pavan Broch, and Shelley Carroll.
Catch the round table, round one at 7:45, round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. News Talk 1010, Toronto.